Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Tuesday, the 24th of July. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Dylan Joel. Over the last couple of weeks, we've been looking back at some of the panels and talks coming from the fourth annual LGBTIQ Women's Health Conference held recently in Melbourne. The conference is proudly co-presented by Thorn Harbour Health and ACON and aims to create safer spaces to strengthen the health and well-being of all LGBTIQ women, including Aboriginal women and sister girls, women of colour, women with disabilities, trans, gender diverse and intersex women. Tonight, we wrap up the series of highlights from the conference with a spotlight on LGBTIQ women and sex work.
Queer rights, women's rights and sex worker rights movements are related to each other. Historically, there have been significant intersections between them. This slide talks about the fact that it was a sex worker, also a transgender woman of colour, who threw the first brick during the Stonewall riots. Sex workers also worked closely alongside and within the queer community during the initial responses to the HIV epidemic. In spite of this, sex workers are often excluded from or invisibilised within queer spaces now. For example, sex workers used to march in the Mardi Gras parade every year, but have since been uninvited since we were deemed no longer suitable for the new family-friendly image of the parade, which is pretty ridiculous. Sex workers do have families too. So aside from having a shared history of activism together, many of our current concerns are in common with each other. This quote, for example, speaks to the fact that both sex work and queer rights movements are essentially about bodily autonomy. And aside from anything else, we are queer. The research done by Vixen very recently, which I've been told will be published later in the year, if people are interested in knowing more about it, that found that 72% of respondents who are sex workers in Australia identify as other than heterosexual. This matches up with research done by Roberta Perkins in 92, which found that figure was 64%. As queer sex workers, we experience both the layering of the stigma experienced by both of those groups, as well as some other unique stigmas. For example, the perception that our personal sexual identities are invalidated by the work that we do, queer phobia within our workplaces, and as has been discussed at length already, accessing healthcare and other services, and sometimes finding that service providers are actually literally incapable of comprehending the complexities of our lives.
That was Joanna Morgan speaking of the stigmatisation of sex workers.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
We now hear from Casey Scott from La Trobe University, talking about peer research on the impacts of sex work stigma in mental health service contexts.
I'm going to go through key themes from semi-structured interviews that I did with 11 full-service sex workers around Australia that kind of looked at their experiences accessing mental health care and talking about sex work with a mental health professional. So this was 8 cisgender women that were working as female sex workers, 2 non-binary people that were working as female sex workers, and 1 gender-fluid person that was working as a male sex worker. And they were predominantly white and identified as queer. And they worked in pretty diverse aspects of the industry, so from private full-service work to brothel work, stripping, pornography, erotic massage, fetish services, etc., and had also accessed a pretty wide range of mental health services, so psychiatric services, counseling services, psychotherapy, rape and assault services, alcohol and other drug treatment services, and crisis assessment and treatment services. But it's important to note that none of them had experienced compulsory treatment, so this is not about compulsory treatment. So first, I want to talk about some of the relationships between mental health, sex work, and stigma. And quite often in the literature on sex work or mental health, you see this assumption that sex work is the primary cause of mental ill health for workers, but this just isn't the case. And like all work, sex work is sometimes a cause of stress for workers. But sex work is also the most beneficial, least harmful, or even only available choice for a lot of us with mental health issues. And this is really key when we talk about sex worker access to mental health care. So participants in this project talked about a number of ways in which their jobs supported their mental health. And a big one of these is just having the financial independence and the time to access ongoing mental health care and not just when you're in crisis. And a lot of participants talked about how starting sex work had increased the amount of choice and autonomy that they had when accessing care and allowed them to continue beyond the subsidized sessions you get under the mental health care plan and allowing them to choose professionals that were the best even if they were expensive or far away. And participants also talked about supportive aspects of sex work, like, or mental health supportive aspects, like the self-directed nature of sex work, having finite tasks to complete every day, having the motivation to perform like basic hygiene for work, having time for self-care and solitude, and having the ability to take time off when unwell, even for long, indefinite periods. And a lot of participants talked about their workplaces and the sex worker community at large as an important source of mental health literacy and support. And brothel-based workers in particular talked about the importance of having a workplace where mental health concerns could be expressed openly, hopefully with management, but if not, at least with your colleagues. And I just want to read this participant quote in case you can't quite read it. So it says, "I can pretty much walk up to work and people will be like, 'How are you?' And I can be like, 'Oh, look, I'm having a bad depression day,' or 'I'm feeling really anxious.' And people will understand and I can be really open in that environment because lots of people come to this work with the same kind of attitude of, 'I like the flexibility because it gives me time to look after my mental health.' That community, and you can rock up and be like, 'Oh, I changed my meds and this is the experience I'm having.' And five other people in the room will be like, 'Well, what are you on? I took that for a while.' You know, the concept of people being guarded about their mental health struggles, which I know is the case in so many parts of society, is just not the case with sex workers. So on the one hand, you can see why sex work works quite well for a lot of us. But at the same time, sex work stigma can negatively impact mental health. And many participants in this project made it very clear that while work had a positive or neutral impact on their mental health, sex work stigma had a profoundly negative impact. And participants also felt that it was much harder to find adequate mental health care as sex workers. And this kind of catch-22 is at the heart of why mental health services need to be a key site of our anti-stigma efforts. So just go through the results. So the good news is that almost all the participants reported at least one non-stigmatizing care experience. And these are five of the key aspects of what felt like non-stigmatizing care to people. So the first is just non-reaction to the initial mention of sex work. Just people treating it as normal work, not inherently dangerous or interesting or traumatizing, just work. Another is sex work not being brought up without consent and not being centered in sessions. So meaning that the mental health professional doesn't independently try to link sex work back into discussions about unrelated mental health concerns. The fourth is that the professional either already understands a little bit about stigma, the industry, and legal and social issues affecting sex workers, or they improve their understanding on their own time. And this last bit was really key because many participants felt it was fine for professionals not to know about sex worker issues, but they didn't want to be paying $180 an hour to tell someone something that they could easily go home and Google. And the fifth is that the professional acknowledges what we talked about previously, this kind of mental health benefits of sex work as an occupation for the individual client. But in spite of being really strategic about how they access care, the majority of participants still reported one or more experiences of stigma. So these are things like being asked inappropriate questions. So, do you use drugs? Do you use condoms? What do you do for safety? And they talked about how these questions are not only invasive, but they reflect really specific harmful misconceptions about our work. And they felt really aware that professionals wouldn't ask similar questions of other workers. So for example, immediately asking a construction worker, "Do you wear safety gear?" And participants also talked about nonverbal cues. So noticing things like facial expressions, body language, personal space, that gave them a sense of being looked down on or even sexualized, and often being unable to pinpoint exactly what was stigmatizing about an interaction could contribute to an overall feeling of worthlessness or sort of craziness. And nonverbal cues were the hardest to address directly with the professional. Participants also reported being prompted to quit sex work or being refused ongoing care if they didn't quit, One worker went 6 months after experiencing an assault at work without finding a mental health professional that didn't conflate her single experience of violence with her entire 6 years of working as a sex worker. Many participants also reported having sex work linked inappropriately with unrelated mental health concerns, and this included having sex work used as evidence of self-harm or of borderline personality disorder. And several participants talked specifically about borderline personality disorder and talked about how kind of the diagnostic criteria of BPD line up quite well with common stereotypes about sex workers. So things like unstable relationships, identity disturbance, sexual impulsivity, this kind of stuff. And participants also talked about being bullied by their mental health professionals into understanding their own quite varied experiences within this single frame of victimhood. Sorry, I'm a little sick. Participants talked about how they felt particularly vulnerable to being kind of gaslit by mental health professionals or made to doubt their own experiences of sex work because they trusted mental health professionals and because they didn't feel safe disengaging from services. And so participants described a number of consequences of the stigma they experienced. This included inaccurate diagnosis and treatment, damaged trust, feeling unsafe when accessing services, internalizing the stigma that was enacted by mental health professionals, exacerbating the symptoms for which they had originally sought care, feeling unable to discuss key aspects of their identity, including when accessing services not only for themselves but for their children, compromising and accepting lower quality care. So for example, by continuing to see professionals with whom they were unhappy, just because those professionals were sex worker friendly, as well as leaving needed services, or for many participants, avoiding services at all for very long periods.
That was Casey Scott from La Trobe University speaking on the panel of Sex Work Through the Eyes of LGBTIQ Women panel discussion at the LGBTIQ Women's Health Conference held recently in Melbourne.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Scarlett Howell is a queer sex worker and a speaker on the panel Sex Work Through the Eyes of LGBTIQ Women panel discussion at the recent LGBTIQ Women's Conference held in Melbourne. She speaks now about femme sex worker health from safety to well-being.
So I'm Scarlett Howell. I'm a queer sex worker. I've been in the industry for about 5 years. I've worked across a range of spaces and locations in Australia. And I also have a background of study in nursing and public health and work in healthcare as a second job. So the focus of my discussion today is on femme sex worker health. An important note I'd just like to make to start off with is the terminology. So the use of the word femme being used to include a lot of our fellow workers who identify as gender non-conforming, intersex or transgender, and are often forced to work in spaces in order to make money where they're, you know, feeling dysphoric about their gender presentation. In addition, it's really important to establish the significant link between LGBTIQ femmes and sex work. So a recent bit of research conducted by Vixen Collective showed that 72% of workers surveyed in Australia identify as anything other than straight. So health is a really important and yet really complicated aspect of our work. So as a sex worker, it's not only our sexual health and regular physical health that we must concern ourselves with. It's our safety and mental well-being, our spiritual health and our just overall lifestyle. We're not working a job with any sick leave, annual leave, superannuation or a union. We have no financial protection against illness or workplace injury, and therefore our health is a paramount concern in maintaining our livelihoods. It must also be acknowledged that within the sex worker community, huge intersectionalities exist. So people of colour, drug users, disabled, street workers, English as a second language and migrant sex workers are more likely to face physical and sexual violence at work, police harassment, as well as greater stigma within the sex worker community, general public and clientele. In the general population, sex worker health is largely disregarded. It's often treated as a joke, rather than a pressing issue. And with recent changes like SESTA and FOSTA impacting our community deeply, in addition to the ever-present whorephobia, cisnormative and health and heteronormative attitudes embedded really deeply within mainstream healthcare services, there are really significant barriers to femme sex workers receiving satisfactory healthcare. This extends to all healthcare services, not only those directly associated with our work. So I'd like to just set the scene with one of many personal examples of hall phobia in the health professional setting I have experienced myself. So this was a few years ago when I was a baby hooker. So in a psychologist's office, telling her that I was a sex worker and was experiencing some anxiety, she just closed her notebook, told me to stop work and never tell anyone again. And I've never been to a psychologist since then. So this fear of stigma is a massive thing. And I tell this just to illustrate that this stigma is not just something to talk about. It's something that has a huge impact on our community's mental, social, and physical well-being. And it's something that everyone has a responsibility to look at how they can help. So the pending introduction of my health record, which for those of you who might not know, it's a government system that's storing patient health data from a number of sources to make it easily available to doctors, specialists, and healthcare workers. It's a really deeply concerning issue in the sex worker community. So under Section 20 of the Sex Work Act of 1994, brothel workers in Victoria must provide certification of being tested for sexually transmitted diseases through blood tests and swabs, as well as criminalising anyone working during a period in which they have tested positive for a range of sexually transmitted diseases or HIV. So this frequent testing, along with the necessity to disclose your status as a sex worker in order to get that certificate, which enables you to go to work, creates a really extensive health record, which through my health record becomes available to all future doctors, health professionals and hospital staff the sex worker deals with indiscriminately. This means in the context of being a patient, the status as a sex worker or being LGBTQI, which is rarely relevant to direct medical care, is disclosed against our will. As any queer person, marginalised person or sex worker would know, this can radically change the quality and manner in which healthcare is delivered. Perhaps even more worryingly, law enforcement agencies are able to access this confidential health information with no court or tribunal approval required. So in Australia, it's well documented that sex workers, people living with HIV, Indigenous people, people who use drugs, and various other minority communities are under far more intense police scrutiny than the general community. So in the context of sex workers and the varying states of legality we experience across Australia, the consequences of this can be really devastating. Still considering the importance of the impact of my health record on our sex worker health and autonomy, an important question comes up about the law in our health. So the Sex Work Act of 1994 is obviously a really dated act. It doesn't adequately reflect our health needs at all. So as a queer sex worker, mandatory 3-monthly testing, it just feels personally like a reminder that society perceives our job as dirty and diseased, which is something that's shared by a lot of workers. So in this context, this means for workers with vaginas, vaginal swabs are taken, and for those without, it's anal swabs. Obviously, these are really highly invasive tests to be performed every 3 months. And often in these communities, there can be a lot of trauma, and as we all know, these tests can be. The testing performed is being done according to a government act, not by our choice. And unless open communication is established between the sex worker and the healthcare provider, inadequate testing is often performed. For example, if a service provider is choosing to provide unprotected oral sex, but is not mandatory to provide throat swabs, then they could be living with an undetected sexually transmitted disease. So in discussing decriminalisation, the Sex Work Act must come under this discussion and testing standards be reviewed and abolished to allow voluntary testing to become the way of the future. So another important consideration in femme sex worker health is personal safety. So street-based workers, legal brothel workers, illegal establishment workers and independent escorts all work in really different settings, and we all experience different security risks as a product of this. There's no one answer. Social media and online advertising platforms are really important. They enable us to negotiate our services, arrange bookings, but also they provide peer spaces in which we can share our experiences, share information on healthcare providers, and also undertake activism. However, they can also pose particular challenges with respect to safety. So privacy and the need to manage intellectual property is an ongoing concern for individual sex workers. And as we have seen this year with the US law Sester and Foster passing. The results of the law changes can have a devastating impact on the sex worker community's security.
That was Scarlett Howell, a queer sex worker and speaker on the panel Sex Work Through the Eyes of the LGBTIQ Women panel discussion.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Now, in our final highlight from the panel discussion, Sex Work Through the Eyes of LGBTIQ Women, Tori, a sex worker, talks about the importance and ramifications of decriminalising sex work.
I'm Tori. I'm a migrant sex worker. Been sex working for about 14 years now, and living in Australia for about 8. And I've been working at Swap New South Wales for about 3 years as an outreach worker.
And I'm Joanna. I'm also a sex worker. I've been in the industry in various parts of it for 13 years, and I've been at Swap for almost 8 years now.
So let's talk a little bit about decriminalization. So lots of people think decriminalization is like absolutely no regulation. But in reality, decriminalization is a whole of government approach to regulation, where sex work is treated like any other business. So it's subject to like the same regulatory mechanisms as a coffee shop or a school, or maybe not school, but different, you know, zoning and planning and like work health and safety and all of that sort of stuff. Fair work covers like industrial rights and those types of things. Because we already have all of these existing laws, so we don't need any more laws to like specially regulate the sex industry. Yeah, because I guess when you have these extra special laws, like here in Victoria with the licensing system, you're not only are you like over-regulating the sex industry, you're stigmatizing it and singling it out as needing more regulation when it doesn't, and you're reinforcing stigma essentially. In a decriminalized setting, sex workers are more empowered to negotiate with our clients. It's much easier to negotiate safer sex practices, and we're more empowered to like have healthier boundaries in bookings and even organizing bookings. So we can say no to clients that don't follow all of our rules and sort of avoid the dangerous ones that might pose potential risks to our health. Under decriminalization, we can attend health services and receive like confidential, anonymous care. You don't have to give your Medicare card or any of your personal information. You can go with your work name. So it's actually quite an important thing, because if you're not going to disclose that you're a sex worker, you're not actually going to get the accurate care that you need. So you want to feel safe to do that, and decriminalization helps with that. And as I said before, lots of other legislation covers all of the other potential issues around like exploitation or coercion or different things like that. One of the most important things, in my personal opinion as a sex worker, is that we have legal recourse under decriminalization. So if someone does perpetrate violence on us, we can go to the police, we can make a report, and it's going to be followed up. Because of this, people don't perpetrate as much against us, because they know that it's not, they're not going to be able to commit crimes against us and get away with it, like in other jurisdictions. For example, here in Melbourne, if you're doing an in-call, in-calls are illegal. You don't have control over your environment, or you're not allowed to have control over your own environment, and that decreases safety. But if someone, like, and you want safety, so you're like, fuck it, I'm going to work outside of the laws. I'm going to do an in-call. Someone comes to your place, they assault you or try and rob you or whatever, you might not go to the police here, because you're essentially committing a crime, working outside of the laws, and so confessing to that crime to the police. So it's less likely that you would report that. And the same goes for street-based workers, who are probably the most marginalized, because street-based work is criminalized. So, you know, they're more targets for violence, because they aren't going to go to the police, because then the police are just going to arrest them for saying that they've done street-based work. Another really important thing about decriminalization is that it allows us to develop work health and safety guidelines and do that in partnership with the government. So like we work with the health department to put out work health and safety guidelines for brothels that outline, you know, what sort of personal protective equipment we need supplied to us to be safe. Decriminalization also makes us like feel more a part of community. Like it reduces stigma. We're able to come out more and say, hey, I'm a sex worker, you know, I'm someone's family member, or I've got children myself, or, you know, people conceptualize us differently. We're humanized, essentially. As sex workers, like, we're constantly, for many, many years, advocating for decriminalization. And for some reason, that's not good enough. People want to hear it from other organizations who apparently have, you know, are more important than our voices. So Amnesty International basically says that government should protect, respect, and fulfill the rights of sex workers, which includes protecting them from harm, exploitation, and coercion, and ensuring that we can participate in the development of laws and policies that affect our lives and our safety, and guaranteeing access to our health, education, and employment options. It also calls for the decriminalization of sex work based on evidence that criminalization makes sex workers less safe by preventing them from securing police protection and by providing impunity to abusers. And also the World Health Organization says that all countries should work towards decriminalization of sex work and the elimination of unjust application of non-criminal laws and regulations against sex workers.
That was Tori speaking on the panel discussion, Sex Work Through the Eyes of LGBTIQ Women. It was the last in our series of highlights from the Thorn Harbour Health and ACON LGBTIQ Women's Conference held recently in Melbourne. For extended podcasts of the conference, head to joy.org.au/The Informer.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook or at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Dylan Joel.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.